Run on,
from the world famous rock studios in Los Angeles, it's Reign of Troy Radio, a USC football podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rot on Got, Reign of Troy Radio's Game of Thrones recap show. Here, breaking down episode 8 of season 6 of Game of Thrones called No One. If you're looking for USC football talk, we'll be back tomorrow. Talk about some new USC football news, including, hey, Tate Martell just committed to another school, because that's what Tate Martell does. And we're going to talk about that tomorrow on Reign of Troy Radio. But for now, it's all Game of Thrones. Talking about the No One episode. As always, follow us on Twitter at Reign of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Reign of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. Tune in Google Play and SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/Reign of Troy Radio. Our phone number is 213-373-1872. And our email address is reignoftroy@fansided.com. I'm your host, Mike Castillo.
I'm sad, so very, very sad.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm actually not that sad because the San Jose Sharks did not win the Stanley Cup. So take that, NorCal. Take that. But yeah. Here on the show, we're joined along with the editor of Reign of Troy, Alicia Daratola, a.k.a. Penguin of Troy. Congratulations on winning the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, that's how penguins do. They win championships sometimes.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah. Which is a good segue to Mr. I don't know how many championships Jake has, but Jake from Once a Bruin Show, welcome to the show.
I have, I think, one official one. It's the Glendale Rec League Basketball Championship. I definitely won that. And then other than that, I don't know. They're all vicariously through sports teams or something.
But does UCLA claim that as a team title?
No, I do, personally. Yeah, I do. But that's more of like a Van Nuys Courthouse title. That's where all the employees worked at the time. But yeah, I don't know.
All right. Fair enough. Well, welcome back, you guys. It's Sunday night. We're breaking this down after the episode has aired. No One, and you know, going into it, looked like there was going to be a lot of deaths. Really pumped up to see, you know, some deaths. I was so excited because Lancel Lannister was going to die. He was going to be killed by the Mountain, and the Waif was going to die.
I choose violence.
I was so pumped, and I don't know. Did it live up to the hype for you, Jake?
Yeah, right now, I mean, just from what you just said, you were batting 50%. I mean, you know, if they're playing baseball, it'd be pretty damn good. You know, if you're in the NBA, that'd be a nice shooting percentage. So, I mean, by that reasoning that you just stated there, Michael, I don't think you had any reason to be sad. And there was plenty of death. There was a decapitation, like with an axe.
There was a great guy
who had his, like, a Mortal Kombat spine skull pull out. I mean, there were some pretty cool deaths, I thought. Had his balls decapitated. I mean, you know, there were some hangings. I mean, the hangings were like the most boring death there. The Waif had her face cut off. I mean, come on, dude. Come on, Michael. Enthusiasm, man.
I was just asking. Alicia, did the episode live up to the hype for you?
I thought the episode was great. I enjoyed it. I will say I sort of fall somewhere in between you and Jake where, like, I enjoyed it. There were little things about it that were just like, I either wanted more of or kind of wish that they were slow playing it instead of rushing through all these things. But I enjoyed the episode, so I don't really have a major complaint. It's just that I think the place that we are in the show means everything's just going. And I think there was some strength to the first few seasons where things got to, you know, simmer a little bit.
And for the record, I am certainly, I think from our pre-podcast discussions, I've been put in the position of defending wholeheartedly this episode and the way things are going, thanks to our curmudgeon, Mr. Michael Castillo. But I definitely agree with Alicia's sentiments that the show has ramped up time-wise, and they're just like running through things at breakneck pace right now. And I certainly wish we had a little more time to breathe. But that being said, I did, Michael, really like this episode.
All right. I didn't hate the episode, first of all. It was a little bit of a frustrating episode. It was frustrating. Maybe I had too much high hopes. I think part of the reason I'm so frustrated is that the end of the episode, looking forward to next week, which is Battle of Bastards, that looks to be an entire episode at Winterfell. That's fine. That's awesome. That's great. I mean, I've always wanted an episode that was in one location. Mind you, it might not be that way, but that's the way it looks like it's going to be with the previews. But that just means everything else is going to be crammed into that final episode to wrap everything up for the season. And that's what worries me, because there's still a lot of loose ends to tie up. And we didn't really get that many loose ends tied up in this episode. So that's the only thing that worries me with that. But let's start this podcast off right by talking about the intro. Did you notice anything new with the intro, Jake?
I will be very brief with this and just say, no, it was the same as the week before.
River Run was in there. I noticed that, but when did they add River Run?
Yeah, no, that'd been there for a while, a couple weeks now. So pretty much ever since, you know, we started getting that. Let's see. Let me go back. I'll double check for you real quick. But it had been in there at least for the last episode, two episodes, I believe.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Well, let's start this podcast off right, starting across the narrow sea in Braavos, where we go with the storyline of who?
Arya Stark.
Yes, and you know, when we last left Arya, she was running through the streets of Braavos, bleeding profusely after she had been stabbed by the Waif, and she needed a lifeline. And the only thing we could come up with was, well, it has to be Lady Crane. That's the only person she knows in Braavos outside of Jaqen and the Waif. Lo and behold, that's how the episode starts, with Lady Crane on stage holding her little fellow actor who's playing Joffrey. And so, Alicia, when the episode starts off like that, were you kind of surprised that it went into that thing? Did you expect to see Arya running? Did you expect her to stumble upon Lady Crane or what? How did you take in that opening scene?
Oh, as soon as it was Lady Crane in the opening scene, it was like, yes, we were right. We were right. She's going to Lady Crane. The only thing I wondered was, is she going to like make a scene running through the crowd? Like in the middle of this monologue or whatever. And obviously that didn't happen. It happened all backstage, with a cool little shot, like following Lady Crane through the backstage area, which I thought was just cool, random. But, yeah, I mean, it was gratifying to know I was right. I think they probably telegraphed it a little bit, but
by the way, Lady Crane, she goes off stage exactly like I get home, my shoes are off, my pants are off, I'm getting comfortable, and Lady Crane, as soon as she gets off stage, boom, there goes the wick.
Do you also go straight for your rum?
No, I don't. Oh. I don't.
See, now I thought, like, wouldn't you be, like, nervous about popping open that bottle? Or because she would have known that it was poison. Like, I was watching her doing that going, like, I would be a little bit more cautious about about opening that bottle again, having, you know, realized that somebody tried to poison me with it.
Yeah, but then again, she had already exacted her revenge on the fake Sansa. So, I mean, yeah, right. That.
Yeah, but anyway, she hears this sound rustling from behind this curtain. And for a second, I was thinking, oh, my God, is this the Waif? Is the Waif going to kill Lady Crane to get the job actually done? That was my thought for a second. But she opens it up, and it's Arya. And when you see that it's Arya and Arya's bleeding, what's going through your mind, Jake?
Well, I went through the same thing as you. But then I figured that it must be Arya because, you know, that's what we were left with in the last episode. And really, that's what we care about most. And then I thought that, you know, at some point Lady Crane was going to buy it at some point, but I thought this was going to be Arya. And so it wasn't really unexpected to find Arya there seeking sanctuary. But what I did like was the interaction once she started nursing her. I kind of thought it was fun to hear, number one, how Lady Crane got rid of the fake Sansa. And then also their little conversation about, like, where are they going to do? Where is she going to go? And she talked about going to the edge of the world. And then we're like, well, you know, these people still think that the world is flat. And then again, it is a fantasy land with dragons.
Right?
So maybe Westeros
like that
is
thing?
Flat. Yeah. I thought that was really cool.
I thought it was really interesting because that's one of the things I've always wondered. Is the world round in this alternative world that they're in? Because in every map, you don't know what's west of Westeros. And you don't know what's east of Essos. So, yeah, I thought that was a little interesting. Also, a Milk of the Poppy.
That was fast acting, man.
Yeah.
I
can't remember. What did the Milk of the Poppy come from before? I can't remember when we last saw that.
Oh, it's just their version of heroin or morphine or, you know, some sort of opium that just puts you right out. You know, it's right. their battle drug that, you know, that will make all the pain go away. That's really all it is. But I was surprised. I think that's the first time we've seen it act so quickly. I'm not sure about that, but I was like, man, you know, that put her right out.
Arya is a small person.
Yeah, but still, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. As a professional regarding some of this crap, at some point, you know, it takes a little longer for something to eat to get to you. But that's all right. I thought that was funny. You know, it was like, oh, I'll drink. It was like a Romeo and Juliet moment. You know, I'll drink the, you know, to thine lips or whatever, and then like, she instantly dies. You know, I thought that was kind of funny. But I guess it fits, being it happened in a theater.
Yeah, and so Lady Crane starts to nurse Arya up, and you know, with these podcasts, what we've done the last few weeks is stick with the storyline throughout the episode, so we don't chop it up. So we will stick with the Arya storyline before we move on to the Riverlands. But let's stick with the Arya stuff. And then we see Lady Crane. She has a visitor, and it's the waif who's coming to see Lady Crane at her house. And as soon as you had to see the waif, you had to know it was coming, Alicia.
Yeah, they like lulled me into a false sense of security. I'm sitting here thinking like, oh, she can go away with the troop and be all happy. And no. As soon as like they did that thing where she reaches up to grab the, you know, tonic or whatever. And then when she pulls her arm back, there's someone in the doorway. And she's like, oh, crap. She's a goner. And she was a goner, and that sucked. But, you know,
pretzel type goner.
Yeah, I don't quite understand the physics of how that death occurred, but it was another death that happened and one of the more interesting ones. But, you know, it didn't look particularly pleasant.
Yeah, she was like Haman Lee in there all of a sudden.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, that's all right. We're just going to roll with it.
Oh, my God. You made a pretzel reference.
Hey, you're the one that called, that said she was pretzel. I had to go there.
Oh, dear.
Anyways.
We'll go with it.
So we see Arya and the waif, and they start to have this scramble through the streets of Braavos. Arya's being chased by the waif. She can't get away from her.
You mean the waif T-1000? That's what I
yes,
thought.
That's exactly what it was. It definitely looked like a scene from Terminator. You mentioned that in our pre-podcast chat. But what did you guys think of this, you know, run through the streets of Braavos? And first of all, can we talk about how the waif really screwed up? If she wouldn't have just stopped and stared and actually chased her, wouldn't she have been able to find her?
She did the stereotypical like villain, like, you know, overconfidence. Like the only thing she was missing was a monologue, and she kind of did monologue a little bit. The number one thing that took me out of that scene was just sort of the thought of like, Arya can run that well despite having been stabbed in the stomach many, many times. But you know, it's fiction. It's they needed her to be able to run, and adrenaline, I guess, can account for a little bit of that. So I'll give him a little pass there, although it was, you know, maybe that milk of the poppy. Like
what bothered me was she wasn't bleeding until she fell on all the fruit.
And I think that was deliberate how they wrote it. I'm sorry.
Like
ahead.
Breaking stitches. That's what I assumed that she had like torn her stitches up or something.
The way I read it was, and probably I'll start saying this a lot over the next couple of weeks, but you know, we don't have any real indication of time as these things play out. In a little while, when we get to these scenes with Edmure Tully, we're going to talk about time, the time compression there. But the way I took it was, is that there was a significant amount of time in which the waif was looking for Arya, and that the Lady Crane had been nursing her, and she was well enough to run. Her stitches had, you know, were not fully healed, but they were, you know, sewn up enough. She had healed up enough to have the first part of that chase, and then when she takes that tumble down the stairway, that's when she rips it, and now we're really worried about her. But I think still, very clearly, she was playing a little bit of possum as she very purposefully lured the waif into that room where Needle was, and then she turned out the lights
You think it was purposeful?
As she was smearing the walls, like I thought she's leaving a trail, because then I was thinking we haven't seen where she would that when they got to that stone, it just instantly reminded me of the room that she was in a couple episodes when she first got Needle out. So yeah, it. I mean, at least to me, that's what it looked like.
Yeah, and I didn't pick up on it as quickly as Alicia did. I was actually typing in my notes, you know, oh, Arya's, you know, as it's going on the screen, I'm like, oh, Arya's, you know, running from the T-1000 and yada, yada, yada. And then at the end, Arya's alone with the T-1000. How's this going to turn out? And then, you know, she cuts out the lights, you know, gets Needle and cuts out the candle. And all of a sudden, I had to back up everything and say, she planned it all.
But, know, by the way,
she's trapped.
Is that the most badass moment of Arya's storyline? Oh, yeah. Flicking Needle and taking out the candle.
That was so cool. And it called all the way back to, you know, season one, episode, you know, three or four or whatever, when Syrio was still around. And I thought that was great.
Almost to the point where I'm surprised they didn't, and maybe I missed it, but I'm surprised they didn't like tease that in the, because they've done a lot of telegraphing in the previously on stuff. Although I guess maybe they didn't need to, because it wasn't like a reminder, a direct reminder of a character. It was just kind of like a little callback, but I'm almost a little bit surprised they didn't like directly reference it, because when it happened, it was like instant, like, oh yeah, that's from Syrio. But it was like a very vague, like, oh yeah, it was vague. Like, I vaguely remember something like this. I think it's a reference to Syrio, but I can't be really certain because it's been a while.
And I'll give credit to the writers for actually writing it that way and not telegraphing everything, because, you know, I know, you know, there have been a lot of complaints about how quickly they're kind of rushing through everything, but that's kind of shows, you know, it's a little nice callback to season one. And, you know, if you're paying attention, you get it. And if you're not, then you don't.
Yeah. And so the way that ends is with a callback kind of to last season, when we see more of the House of Black and White. And we see that it is confirmed that Arya has killed the Wave by putting the Wave's face, her with the bloody eyeballs and bloody face, mouth removed from this face, put on the wall there. And it's confirmation that Arya has won. And Jochen comes and he seems kind of proud, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely.
He's like smiling.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, we find out a couple things. Number one, we find out that Arya was playing possum a lot more than we thought. So all of our complaints about Arya being able to run through the streets and things, I think we have to acknowledge that there is a certain level of mysticism that goes into the House of Black and White and the Faceless Men, right? Can we acknowledge that? So apparently Arya has learned how to, you know, kind of heal herself a little better, because by the time she confronts Jaqen, she's pretty much whole, isn't she?
She's not clutching her wounds. Anymore.
And the blood that we see leading into the House of Black and White and through the, you know, through the hallways and up to the face of the Waif.
Is the Waif's, yeah.
At first,
yeah,
I thought that was Arya's blood, but it turns out that's the Waif's blood, right? So Arya has found some way to, you know, heal herself, and she's completed her training, and I think that's why Jaqen is so happy with her.
I have a question about that really quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
So Jaqen says a girl is truly no one, and he seems very, very pleased, and it looks like she has fulfilled all of her trainings. And, you know, Arya gives Alicia's favorite line of the whole damn series. A girl is Arya Stark of Winterfell, and I'm going home.
The series.
You made it sound like that. Anyway.
I thought it was a line I was waiting for like the whole season now. And it came, and it was like, yes, I knew they were going to do it. And I thought it worked.
But here's my question.
What?
Do you kind of get the sense that the whole no one thing is kind of a big kind of fallacy, because Arya is not no one. She definitely is Arya. She definitely has opinions. She has her own mind. So she's not no one. Was the Waif really no one? Because the Waif really wanted to kill Arya pretty damn bad, more so than an assassin like the Faceless Men should want to. Like, she had some, you know, vengeance in her to go after Arya, and Jochen looks pretty pleased that the Waif is dead. So, like, all of them, maybe the whole no one thing was just an ideal, and you strive for that, but no one ever is truly no one. You just get as close as can be.
I think the way I
crazy?
Looked at it, yeah, I think the way I looked at it is, you know, Jochen kind of adopted Arya, right? You know, she loses Syrio, she loses her father, and she's kind of aimless over there in Harrenhal way back when, or actually before that, when she saves his life.
Loses Hot Pie, too. Don't forget, she lost Hot Pie.
Yes, thank you, Michael. But anyways, Jochen kind of adopted her, you know, and I think that this is all coming to fruition at that last moment where he says, hey, now you're finally no one. And she says, no, I'm still Arya Stark. She completes her training, and now she has the option to either stay with Jochen at the House of Black and White and continue to, you know, go on the path to assassinate people, or she has the choice to go back to her former life, having completed all of this, you know, this whole journey. And I think that Jockin's kind of giving her the choice. And so he's like, you know, do what you're going to do. But now, you know, you're a whole person now. And now, you know, your destiny's in your own hands. And whether he was happy that the wife died or whether he was just happy that Arya lived through it, I think that's debatable. But he knows who he is, and he is no one. But he gave Arya the chance to be no one, and she chose to be someone, and that is Arya Stark of Winterfell.
Well, I think what Michael is saying is, I think what both of you are saying is true, is like, you're never truly no one because you still keep, you know, you still keep a bit of yourself, and Jockin obviously kept a bit of himself, and the Waif obviously kept a bit of herself. But what sets Jockin apart from Arya is that Jockin and, I mean, theoretically, I mean, obviously the Waif sort of chose to be no one. You make the choice to be no one. So Arya, you know, like you said, like, is given the choice, and that she chooses to be Arya is just, you know, it's her choice, and it's what sets her, it's what makes her not no one. So it's not like a wrong or a right choice. It's just, you know, you have to fully commit to being no one. And if she wasn't going to do that, then she was never going to sort of work in that role.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I just think that the main point of that is that Jockin definitely still, you know, had an interest in Arya. And no matter what she chooses, he's still, you know, he basically adopted her and wanted to see her succeed somehow. And so when she passes the final test, it's like, he gives her the opportunity to stay with him or to move on. And he's fine with it one way or the other.
Yeah, I agree with that. The one thing in this sort of sequence that I kind of found myself like upset that the death was off screen for the Waif.
Oh,
but at the same time, like, I can't decide if the reveal of the face on the wall is worth the beating like the Waif.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with. I understand what you're saying, Alicia, and it was totally worth it because I loved the way they did it. Because otherwise, you don't have the callback to Sirio, and you don't have the very cool reveal, the tension there. And so I thought that was great how they did that.
Yeah, I thought if you're going to do it off scene, you have to have some sort of device that plays up for it and makes
a cool
up for
reveal.
It. Yeah, yes, cool and so we got that. Mind you, you know, compare it to the other off-camera deaths that we've seen so far. Let's compare it to Blackfish, who we're going to talk about a little bit later. We don't get anything with Blackfish. No, Blackfish died. Oh, okay, all right. Fair enough. That nothing. With Stannis, we don't see him die, but we see Brienne swinging back her sword. So it kind of, it was like a half on-screen death, right? Half on,
well, I think
half
it's enough,
off. Like,
though.
Yeah, it was enough. So if you want to put it on a scale like this, if you can have an off-screen death, this is how to do it. Blackfish is how you don't do it. Stannis is okay. So, yeah, I was totally okay with that. I thought the reveal made it worthwhile. But we've talked about Braavos forever, and there's a lot of stuff to talk about. So let's move across the Narrow Sea and go to a certain place that we don't have a drop for. So you're going to have to just hit the button, Jake, and I'll have to...
The Riverlands.
Perfect.
Yes, to talk about the Hound. And so we see the Hound slowly coming up on these dudes who are...
the Hound.
Basically the high school locker room.
Yes, it's a high school locker room thing. Very, very awkward scene.
I thought it was hilarious.
I was too awkward to describe. It was funny. It was funny. I laughed. I thought it was great. But the Hound comes through and wheels his hatchet around.
Michael,
and
wasn't
chops
that how
him
all down. Isn't that how you learned how to kiss? Isn't that how that worked?
Yeah.
Similar story?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Just thankfully for me, though, the Hound didn't kill me right after.
That's right.
Yeah, and so the Hound kills these dudes. No confirmation that they're
awesome
a brotherhood
passion.
Without banners, but do you think they were or what?
No, we did have confirmation because in the next scene when he goes and meets Beric and Thoros, they're like, these were our brothers. And,
all right, fair enough.
You know,
I missed that.
Hanging him for that, yeah. So, yeah, all right. Get confirmation of it, and I thought it was great. I mean, we were waiting for Hound's revenge, and he took it very quickly. He decapitates a guy. as we've said before, he ball capitates somebody else. And then how do you kill the other guys? Just by, you know, thunking him with the axe, right?
He slit one's throat.
Slit one of the guys' That's throats. Right. Yeah.
Very high gore factor. With
very that. Sharp axe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He must have sharpened it in between chopping all that wood and like walking to find these bad guys. He must have had his sharpening stone with him at the time.
Yeah, because he definitely had an axe to grind. No pun intended.
But I don't know,
maybe a little bit. Okay, all right. So then he goes and he meets the rest of the Brotherhood Without Banners, like you mentioned. Beric Dondarrion and Tharos of Mirror finally back.
Cool. Super cool.
And the Hound sees them and he's all pumped up because he wants to kill Lem Lemoncloak.
Yeah.
But they've already got them strung up to hang him, which was a little interesting conundrum. So talk about that, Jake. How weird was that, that they were going to do the killing for him?
Well, if you remember last week, I was kind of lamenting the fact that the Brotherhood might be, have fallen on bad times and they might have turned evil. And I was very, very happy to see how they resolved that question this week when the Hound stumbles upon Beric and Tharos actually hanging these guys for the crimes they committed. And I thought that was great. And that means that the Brotherhood is still out there seemingly as a force of good, even though they're committed to the Red God or the Sun God or whatever it is. I still think they have a part to play in all this, and it was great to see them being good. And my favorite part of that scene was the whole morbid bargaining over, you know, who does the Hound get to kill and who does he not get to kill and how does he get to kill them and all that stuff. Eventually
that was so much fun. Before we started recording, we were having a conversation about like why is the Hound back and what purpose does he serve? I'm sure we're gonna find all that out, but for now, the Hound has sort of taken up a role like Tyrion for me, where I don't really care what he's doing so long as he's on screen doing it. And like that scene was exactly what I'm talking about, just like that negotiating over how many of the three men he could kill and how exactly he could kill them.
Was it better than him, you know, talking about chicken though? Because you knew they were going to have a chicken line when they're eating afterwards, and he's
oh, I'm sure
he mentions his love for chicken. So I mean, I thought that was great.
Oh, one thing we didn't mention though, before he gets to the guys strung up, anyone note the line that where he asked the last of the dudes he killed in the first scene, where the rest of them are. And he's like, is that going to be those are going to be your last
words?
Oh,
that's great. Yeah.
And then awesome. you're shit at dying like, or something you. Like that.
He's like, F you. And he's like, you're a cunt. And he's like, ah. And that was true.
Like, those are going to be your last words. Like, you're terrible at dying.
Oh, that was good stuff. Yeah, you're terrible at dying.
Oh, it was beautiful.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, hopefully he'll be saying those words to the mountain at some
we'll
point.
See.
We will have to say, yeah.
Michael, why do you think that the Clegane Bowl is dead at this point?
Well, let's hold off on Clegane Bowl until we get to King's Landing, because that's when we can talk about Clegane Bowl, because Clegane Bowl had a very big, big kind of development or non-development in this episode. So I think let's hit the pause button there. We'll get to that in a second, and let's cross the narrow sea again. And speaking of Tyrion, let's go see Tyrion.
Marine. Tyrion Lannister.
Yes, Tyrion and Varys, they're walking through Marine, and guess who's there?
For the night is dark and full of terrors.
Well, not Melisandre, but it was a different Red Priestess there giving a speech in the little town square as they walk by, which I thought was interesting. And it was not the girl who had met them a couple episodes ago. It wasn't Kenvara. It was a different Red Priestess. Anyway, so Tyrion and Varys are talking, and Varys is going on a secret expedition because he says they need Westerosi friends and ships, which, side note, we know that they're coming, but they don't know yet.
Yeah.
I don't want to skip ahead too quickly, but when they first showed the ships that do come, I got really excited and was like, they're already here.
That's what I thought. Yeah. But anyways,
but that's getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah. Just a little bit. So Varys, and Tyrion bid adieu, because Varys, they're done waiting for Dany. They, Danny needs to be there already, and she's not there. So Varys is going.
Did you think anything of the, you know, Varys very, very quickly said that he had to leave kind of Tyrion behind and move off by himself, presumably to get a new disguise to go do whatever he was going to do. And we've seen Varys be a master of disguise before. Do you think
Varys is Euron Greyjoy?
Yeah, I don't think that's very true. Going back to earlier in the episode, do you think Varys has had some of the faceless man training somehow? How does he disguise himself so well? Is it just a matter of, like, you know, applying makeup to himself, or does he have some sort of magic going on with him?
Well, Tyrion talked about how he doesn't have to shave. Maybe he just throws on a fake beard.
That is true.
Maybe he's been hanging out with the characters from the Americans.
You tell me though. Exactly. Well, that's my question is. He purely just a good at doing fake disguises like the Americans, or is it more of a mystical thing in the show? Have we seen him disguise himself? I'm trying to remember.
I don't think so. But by the way, am I the only one who finds this little secret mission a little weird?
Get them ships and get across the.
No, I just because I still don't trust Varys entirely. Varys and Baelish are the only two that are definitely in it for themselves.
No, I completely disagree.
Yeah, Varys may have completely just pulled the wool over my eyes, but I totally believe him to be genuine. Like, I think he and Tyrion are sort of, I mean, the two sides of the same coin, but they're the two that are very much in it for the good of the many.
The,
spirits,
yeah, the difference absolutely. Between Varys and Baelish, though, I think Baelish floats around and his goal at the end of the day is being powerful from behind the scenes. Whereas Varys, I think his goal is just floating to the top and doing the right thing, but being on the right side of history. So yeah, Varys leaving, I don't know, it has me kind of weird.
For me though, Varys leaving has a lot to do with the deal with the Red Priests. Like, I think it was notable that he talked about feeling uncomfortable with that. I mean, maybe it has nothing to do with it, but I definitely feel like the tone of it, the way it was said, makes me think that he's just he would rather be away from that whole deal.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm confusing the books with the movies or with the show that much, but there's been numerous times where Varys has been on monologues and the different things that have informed his motivations. And Michael, he's been very clear, and once again, I don't remember if it's TV or the books, but very clear that his intentions are, you know, for the greater good kind of thing. That's what he's really been motivated. That's why he, kind of went with the overthrow of the Targaryens, and then now he's trying to reinstall the Targaryens. At the end of the day, he's trying to figure out what's best for Westeros.
All right. Fair enough. Well, I'm still a little. I need to learn more about Varys.
Skeptical.
Obviously, I'm skeptical of him, man. I've always been. Anyways. So sticking in Meereen, Tyrion, Missandei, and Grey Worm have perhaps the most pointless scene of the entire series to date.
You didn't them telling jokes?
No.
It made me laugh. It was cute.
I thought it was cute.
We get so few cute scenes.
It felt like such filler to me. The reason
it was informing Missandei and Grey Worm's love is what it was.
Well, and I think it was also trying to lull us into everything's great and happy and we're smiling now and fire.
For sure.
I thought it was about 3 minutes longer than it could have been.
Heart of stone, Michael Castillo.
No, I'm just. I said at the beginning, there's so much stuff that needs to be addressed before the end of the season that you can't afford. And then in this episode,
that's a fair criticism.
We had about 6 or 7 minutes of filler scenes. Bronn and Podrick talking about fighting. It was a great scene, but it had no, like, that was the deleted scene. That was a scene that could have been deleted.
No way.
It had nothing to do with the plot.
It was great.
No, it was a 3-minute scene that didn't need to be there.
It was art.
When time is so of the essence.
I want more Pod and Bronn.
I like them. I like Pod and Bronn, but this wasn't the time.
Game of Thrones flavor.
But we need.
But,
we need more time on other things.
That's a fair point. I think you're right. If this was, if these were like seasons that they had more time to simmer with things, then these scenes would be great. But, you know, again, we had a long discussion pre-start of the podcast, which I feel like we should have just recorded and been part of it because we're referring back to it so often. But yeah, we talked about how we're off of the books now. Like, this is all just the screenwriters' work now. And a lot of those scenes feel like, well, wouldn't it just be a great scene to have these things happen? And because they're working off of a, you know, instead of like a book that they're adapting now, they're just working off an outline of things that happen. They're throwing in these filler scenes because it's a great scene, as opposed to being like, this is really essential for getting us to where we need to go.
Yeah, Michael, I think you're spending a little too much time, like, you know, thinking ahead of, you know, trying to think ahead. Stop trying to think ahead and just enjoy it for what
no,
it is.
I want every episode to be an hour and a half, because I want to have these these scenes in there with everybody. I want to see more of everything. I want to see more of these characters talking and us getting to know them and us getting to love them, which I loved with Pod and Braun. I thought there was a great scene.
Hey, so I have a question for you.
Taken out of the context of where the season arc is, that was my only complaint.
No, I know, but you know, you're crying for how are they going to fit all this stuff in? This episode I thought was crammed full of stuff. Number one, do you think that number one, in the next two episodes, we're going to see any more of Arya?
I think we're done with Arya.
Put a percentage on it. We could put a percentage on it.
10%, I think we see her again. If we see her, the only thing we're going to see her is getting on the ship. Just like the season 4 ended with her getting on the ship, I think season 6 could end with her getting on the ship, and that's it.
I think that's true. How about you, Alicia?
I don't think there's anything else to show in her arc.
Low priority,
I think because we saw her in season 4 getting on a ship, we're not going to see her get on a ship this time. I think she's done.
I think that's totally
maybe
correct.
We get a flash of her like landing at the very
really
end.
Quick though. Really quick question about Arya. Season 5 and season 6 of Arya. Don't you think they could have compressed that into one season? Like, I understand that you needed to have her come back to Westeros at the right time, but I feel like season 5 and season 6 were so slow on her storyline, they could have compressed that into one season.
That's your heart talking, Michael.
All right. I'm just saying.
Well, anyway, so we think Arya's storyline, for the most part, it may, without, you know, maybe a little flash at the end, but for the most part, we're done with Arya. Okay, so now my next question is, do you think we're done with Jaime and River Run for this season?
Maybe. I don't think so, though. I don't think so.
At the very, you know, the only way that Jaime gets back
Jaime
into the series,
because Jaime is still.
The only way he gets back into the series is if he returns to King's Landing or he shows up somewhere else. Could you buy into that? I think we're done with River Run.
He could get back to King's Landing, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Okay, here's my question, though. Sam and Gilly have to be in this season, still in the episode, episode 9 and 10, because the way that they left them with Sam running with the sword, like.
Why do they, though?
You think they're going to end like
they left Bran, who is a much more important character than Sam and Gilly. They left Bran for a whole season hanging out.
Yeah, but the way season 4 ended, it ended on at the end of a chapter with Sam right now. You're leaving him in the middle of an action.
Yeah, I think we're going to see Sam again.
We might see Sam again, but at the same time, Sam is like a D character. I mean, he's like way off the
main get that.
Plotline.
I get that, but I still think if you're not going to have Sam's storyline come to some sort of resolution, then you didn't need him in the season at all.
Yeah, it was a wasted storyline if he doesn't come back into it, probably in the finale, because I don't know where they could fit him in the next episode.
And anyways,
I don't think we're going to get a whole lot of Sam. And so, you know, I think that River Run is filled up, is done. I think that Arya is done. I think that Sam, we might get a little snippet of him. Fine. But then really, you know, presumably next week we're going to get all of the wall stuff, or I mean the Winterfell stuff, and that's Ramsay and Jon and Sansa. That's all done. So as far as what we're going to cram into that supersized, 66 minute or whatever it is long finale, it's going to be Daenerys and it's going to be King's Landing. And there's really not too much else to cover. We're not going to go back to Dorne, I doubt, unless they show up somehow, at King's Landing or something. So you're really looking at an episode that's going to be cut in half, I would bet. along the storylines. And really, it's not really that much else to show. What else is out there? The pirates might show up somewhere. Presumably, they might show up with Danny.
The Greyjoys need to be involved, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, but presumably, but they're on their way to Danny, so it's all going to converge.
But hey, they were already in Volantis. They're going to be in Marine by the episode 10.
Well, that's my point, is that you're lamenting the fact they have to cram all this stuff in, but we've gotten to the point now where they're where these
all
characters
right,
are
all right,
to
okay, okay,
together,
okay, 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 all right. All right. You made a point.
You've worn him down.
I get it. Anyways, let's talk about Marine. We're still on Marine here. And so, yes, Alicia makes a great point that however stupid this scene was where they get drunk and joke and however cute it is you want to talk about it, it does lull you down to think that everything's okay. And then all of a sudden the slave masters return on ships and
don't we hear like
Marine,
horns or sirens or something?
Like all of a sudden the Russians were going to start dropping bombs or something. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
But the slave masters come in. Looks like they're almost going to overtake the castle. You get those unsullied soldiers like in the castle, like, oh shoot, what's gonna happen?
That was pretty cool.
And here comes Miss Convenient.
Thud, thud.
You're so
all right, can I get my complaint in about this scene just really quickly?
Because
I didn't mind the scene, but I did think, like, I noted it was really weird that there's like this thud thud, and it's like obviously, oh, that's the dragon. And then they open the door and in she walks and we get a beat on her face and then boom. So like they paid Emilia Clarke to be in this episode for like literally a second.
You know what she looked like when she walked in? She looked like Selena Meyer in Veep coming into a meeting. Okay, what are we doing? All right. What are we doing?
I'm here.
Like,
they should have just left it like with us knowing, well, the dragon is back, because that, it was kind of obvious, but don't like,
right.
Maybe don't
to,
do the reveal.
To where in the window or in that thing when they look out on the sea, you can see Drogon flapping away.
Yeah.
And then you would have known that they dropped her. Yeah, okay. I don't think she minds getting paid
no.
the extra episode.
No, I don't. I mean, I didn't necessarily mind her being there. It just, the scene felt rushed for, I mean, like, it needed another line of dialogue or it needed another look of reaction from the people in the thing, or it needed something I don't know. It felt out of place.
You know, I thought it was interesting that Grey Worm kind of took over. I kind of like that, how he's like, you know, he's telling Tyrion, you know,
yeah,
back
awesome.
The F down because, you know, you got us into this mess.
Well, he showed balls for once.
I felt that Tyrion, yeah, thanks, Michael. I felt that Tyrion, actually staved off the trouble. You know, he kind of solved the problem, but now this is the trouble that he, you know, with his solution, this is the trouble that got bought. You know, he gave the slavers a chance to kind of take their revenge, but he bought him enough time for Daenerys to come back. And at the end of the day, that's, I guess, what's really important. But I liked how Grey Worm was very assertive, and I liked how they stated that, you know, he kind of stated their plan. They can't hold the whole city, but they can hold the pyramid, and that's what they're going to do. And at that point, they get bailed out by Daenerys showing up with the dragons. And now, I guess, presumably, the season finale, we'll see, you know, Hellfire reigned somehow.
But the dragon flew, like, away? So is that going to be a problem?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I think that now she's back. She's got control of it. She's got a...
Oh, and she's got the other dragons in the dungeon thing.
Yeah, she's got two more dragons. Well, actually, they let him free, remember? Didn't they let him out? Didn't...
We never got confirmation.
The dragon can only bring one person at a time, so it's got to go back... to Raya Sofia to get the and then back and forth.
We never got confirmation about just how free the other dragons are. Like, because remember we were wondering, are they stuck in the basement thing, or is there an opening in the basement thing where they can get out?
Yeah, I thought when we left that, I thought that Tyrion kind of let him go free range. So I think there was free range dragons.
He did, but we don't know if they're just unchained in the dungeon or if they are unchained and freed.
Well, I guess we'll find that out very soon. But I can't imagine, why would you unchain the dragons and then leave them in the dungeon, right? I mean, right? That doesn't really accomplish anything.
Right.
So, but
well, the other question could be, maybe they didn't want to leave. They just didn't want to be chained, but they wanted to be there by their own free will.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think we'll find that out in the finale. But once again, this breakneck pace that we're on, I think we're going to have a resolution to the whole slaver problem by the end of this season. Could you guys all agree with that? And then next season, I guess, will be about Danny's return.
There has to be. There has to be. Because if Danny's coming to Westeros, the slaver stuff has to be over.
I think you're right.
And the last time we're going to see Meereen is in the finale. That has to be right. Because the end of the episode has to be, I mean, the end of the season has to be them sailing to Westeros, the wall coming down, stuff like that. Like, that's...
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't think it's that dramatic.
Winterfell being back into the Stark's hand and everything. That, like, just because the way that the showrunners have talked about it, how at the end of the season you're going to be able to see the finish line, to me that's what the finish line would that's what it would mean to be able to see the finish line. Is you could see, okay, Danny's coming back, the wall's down, the Starks have Winterfell again. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know if I quite agree with that. I think certainly that Winterfell will be resolved, and I think we all kind of agree that it'll be under Stark control, but it'll be resolved. I don't know if the wall will be down, but certainly I think that, and I don't know if Danny will be on ship sailing back, but I think that Danny will have the East solidified, right? Like, I mean, she might not be sailing back, but she won't have any more battles to fight over there. It'll be done.
But at least have a resolution in the storyline. Like, there could still be conflict over there, but it just won't affect the overall storyline.
Yeah,
I think she'll have a mode of transportation. I don't know if she'll be sailing away yet, but she'll definitely have, like, the ships will be like, oh, that's how she's getting out.
The number of rock songs we're quoting here, by the way.
I know, right?
The wall keeps coming down, sail away. Jeez.
But I think what's pointing to that, the conclusion I think we all agree with is, if you remember last time on Game of Thrones, at the beginning of this episode, they're very clear to once again bring up that Red Priestess, the one that talked to Tyrion, how she was talking about.
Even though they didn't show her, yeah.
They didn't show her, but they made sure they got that dialogue in of,
right,
we are preparing to, you know, fight this fight and then win the battle to come, you know. And I think that's what next season will be about, that battle to come. And that is presumably, you know, the cold versus the fire versus the ice, right?
Right. All right, well, let's move along and cross the narrow sea again and go to the capital.
King's Landing.
Cersei Lannister.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Finally.
No,
since the trailer came out, everyone has been clamoring for the moment that she says, I choose violence.
Yeah.
We finally get it. We finally get it. So Lancel Lannister and members of the Faith Militant come to the Red Keep to summon Cersei to go to the Sept to talk to the High Septon, and Cersei doesn't want to go. She says if she's going to talk to him, it has to be on her turf. It has to be there at the Red Keep. Lancel says, order your man to step aside or there will be violence. Cersei says, I choose violence, and that's when...
Awesome.
Zombie Mountain, first of all, let's commend this dude from the Faith Militant for trying to get that axe thing with the spikes and using that against Zombie Mountain, which Zombie Mountain just like looked at him. No, dude, that's not going to do anything to me. Sorry. And then Zombie Mountain pretty much strips his head off.
Most gruesome death since Oberyn Martell, maybe?
Has to be. Or when the mountain just, Zombie Mountain killed that dude against the wall for peeing.
That was fun too.
This one was like as it was happening, I turned turned my back on the screen because I was afraid it was going to be another on-screen Oberyn Martell situation.
Are you guys too old to appreciate Mortal Kombat Sub-Zero spine rip, you know, type action?
Oh, no.
That's really what Zombie Mountain did. Yeah.
What's with Game of Thrones is, you know, fetish for blood dripping. Like, we get that scene from inside the gutter looking up.
Yeah, I know, it was awesome.
Like the blood coming down. I thought that was just like
a beat. Yeah, that's good stuff.
Super gory. And then anyway, so Lancel's men are terrified at that, and they leave. And Cersei's like, "Yeah, I will be glad to see him here at the Red Keep." Yeah, all right.
And you know what's kind of crazy is I'm real curious to see now. You know, that at least at King's Landing, that appears to be Cersei kind of shooting her wad, so to speak, with what her power is, because she is immediately, has her legs chopped out from under her, for lack of a better term, in the next scene, right, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, she goes to the throne room, and we see Kevin Lannister, the Hand of the King.
He's a dick, too, man. But he really doesn't like his niece anymore.
He totally acts like the balancer, and he's like, no, you're not allowed in the VIP area. You got to go over there. you gotta watch the show from the balcony.
That's right.
And so she gets thrown along with the other women, which was just very uncomfortable to see Cersei over there. She didn't really pull the "Do you know who I am?" card, but her eyes did. She told them with their eyes.
Yeah, everybody sort of moved away from her.
Yeah, and so we see Tommen go on the Iron Throne to give this, you know, royal announcement. And the royal announcement is that Loras Tyrell and Cersei Lannister will stand trial. But here's the big kicker: trials by combat are no longer allowed. No longer. So this hereby makes Cleganebowl. I don't know, guys.
I don't understand how, though. Why?
Because Cleganebowl was supposed to be a trial by combat. It was going to be a zombie mountain fighting for Cersei, and it was going to be the Hound fighting for the Faith. Doesn't look like that's happening now.
Yeah, but I don't see how that would ever happen
outside
the
context of a
But the whole deal about Cleganebowl is it was going to be a trial by combat.
But why? I don't understand. So whoever wrote that theory is an idiot, because who would ever think that the Hound would ever buy into any ideology long enough to, you know,
no,
fight
but here's
the,
here's
like
the thing.
That.
Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. Okay. Here's the thing, man. Here's the
Tell
thing.
Tell me. Okay.
So the Hound was found and saved by Brother Rey. Brother Rey is a follower of the Faith. We see last week that Brother Rey and all of his other religious people that he had, you know, taken under his wing, they were building a sept, which is, you know, part of the same faith as the Faith. So my thought was that he was, you know, the Hound was going to be aligned enough with Brother Rey and the Faith, not as if he was, you know, actually believing in that stuff, but aligned enough for them to call on him and use the whole, like, you hate your brother. Your brother screwed with you. So you need to fight against him to kind of, you know, get revenge on your brother. And he's like, okay, fine. And then I will revenge Brother Ray's death by trying to avenge my own face being charred off by my brother.
Let me lay this on you, okay? Now, presumably, Cersei is going to be displaced from King's Landing, right? Because if she cannot have a trial by combat, she has no way to win. Can we all agree on that? As far as like her trial, there's no way she wins her trial if she's in trial by combat.
She's gonna be sent to the Night's Watch. Yeah.
So her only option right now is to get the hell out of Dodge, unless we had that little tease of, you know, she had that rumor that her and Qyburn were talking about. So we have that to worry about too. But what if she somehow ends up leaving King's Landing with the Zombie Mountain, and she meets up with Clegane somehow out there in the wilderness?
No, if she goes to River Run,
something like that, maybe she goes and flees over with Jaime, and then somehow she runs into the
maybe,
Hound.
Maybe
Zombie Clegane runs into there. I still think it's very, very, very likely that Zombie Clegane meets
maybe,
his end.
Maybe I Cleganebowl needed to be official. It needed to have a ref. There needed to be bells. There needed to be ring girls. There needed to be the whole thing.
I think there's.
I hate to break it to you, Michael, but you were going to be disappointed no matter what based on that criteria.
I think that's true.
Just saying. All right. Well,
I think the secret is that Qyburn has.
Okay. Perfect.
Oh, it's definitely the boom juice stuff, whatever that is.
All right.
So, you think so? I thought it was some sort of secret about the origin of the High Sparrow that he's actually a giant hypocrite. That's how I kind of read it.
All right,
we see Qyburn and Cersei. Qyburn says, the old rumor you told me about, my little birds investigated. Cersei's like, is it just a rumor? Is it something more? And he's like, oh, more. Much more. See, I thought, like, if that scene would have been before Tommen gives his announcement, I would have been like, oh, they found out the Hound's alive. And and so they're going to plant the idea. They're going to plant the idea to the Faith to call on the Hound. Because they know the Mountain could beat the Hound because he's done it before. That's how the Hound's going to get back. Nope. That's not it. So you think it's wildfire that Qyburn's talking about, Alicia?
Yeah, because then that gives purpose to the whole flashback that they did with Bran and the Mad King showing that the wildfire. Because it's, you know, it's been a couple seasons since it got used by Tyrion. Like, maybe.
But wasn't wildfire Qyburn's creation in season 2 anyways?
I don't remember. Tyrion, and I'm in forgive me, but I'm much more, I remember the books a lot more than I remember the show, but I think it overlapped. There was like a whole segment of priests that were just devoted to keeping the wildfire around. And they were like the remnants of the Mad King's kind of like, cabinet, so to speak. And Tyrion just kind of unearthed all the wildfire that they had stored at King's Landing, and he used that to beat Stannis when they tried
to... But was that the same wildfire that was hidden?
Because Qyburn was involved in that. But anyways,
at that time, Qyburn and Tyrion were kind of working together a little bit. So he was part of it,
but it looks like what we have knowledge of is that there's pockets of wildfire beneath King's Landing that's just ready to explode at any point, because we see that flashback from Bran a couple weeks back with the wildfire sweeping underneath the bowels of the city. So that could definitely be it. I don't know. I'm kind of liking your idea, Jake.
I kind of feel like it's more about the High Sparrow, because I mean, that's who needs to take a fall. And like originally when that scene was playing out, I was thinking, oh shit, Cersei's going to have to get out of Dodge. But then I'm kind of thinking that it might have something to do with, she still has a trump card to play. She's had her main trump card, her visible trump card played.
By the way, we're going to have to stop calling them trump cards.
I know, right? but I think she's still got somebody up her sleeve, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, do you guys know that the hot internet theory of who the High Sparrow really is?
Please do tell, Mr. Internet.
Howland Reed.
I don't think that. What's the reasoning behind that?
The reasoning behind it is no one's seen Howland Reed. We haven't seen him in the show. And the High Sparrow talks about how when he was younger, he would... Like, his origin story is a little murky. And then when he talked about, his exploits and everything, and Howland Reed after Robb's Rebellion... Robb's Rebellion? That's not right. Robert's Rebellion. Yes, yeah. Robert's Rebellion. How he could have found the faith afterwards. I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. So that's
right up there with me with your Cleganebowl rationale. So I'm not.
No, Cleganebowl makes more sense.
Not Clegane fighting for the faith. But yes, okay.
All right. Hit the music. I'm
fighting for sure.
All right, hit the music again, because we got to go to Cersei's Brubin, or is it Husbrother? Is it Husbrother?
I was like, I thought you were having a stroke. Here, I'll hit the music.
River Run. Okay, so we go over to River Run, which has a lot of stuff going on. So it starts with Brienne and Pod arriving at River Run, and Brienne goes to talk to Jaime. Pod has that little chat with Bronn, and
which was awesome.
I like I said, I liked the scene. I just didn't like the time that it ate up when other stuff needed to be resolved. But moving on. Let's talk about Brienne and Jaime. Interesting little scene.
Are they fucking in there? That's what I want to know. Are they fucking? That was great. Come on.
It was great.
It was great.
Because having seen Brienne's, like, the expression on her face when she saw Jaime in the camp, she's so angsty. Yeah.
My God, Brienne is so angsty. Oh my God.
Like, they played it more.
She needs Tormund,
straight,
man,
this time than they have in a while. I mean,
that's great. Yeah, even to the end where they wave at each other so awkwardly, which we'll get to. But I mean, it was so good. I love that.
Yeah, it was definitely good. So Brienne's there, and she's trying to tell her plan that, well, I'll convince the Blackfish to just leave, and if I do that, then you'll just let me go with the Blackfish, and then you retreat south. We'll go to the north. Deal? All right. Okay. By the way, here's your sword. And Jamie's like, nah, you can keep the sword. And so then Brienne goes in to talk to Blackfish and tells her that, she's trying to protect Sansa, plays up the family card because the Blackfish is the brother of Catelyn Stark, and doesn't really go over well. Blackfish says, Riverrun's my home. If Jaime Lannister wants it, he can bloody hell take it the way everyone else does. And he says no. So what do you think of that, Alicia?
Well, I just think it's interesting that, like, Sansa keeps running into this problem of people going like, I understand your dilemma. I feel for you. But, like, you want your home back and we're just interested in keeping our homes, which, like, I wonder, like, what that's a reflection of. Is that just a reflection of how scarred everyone still is from the Red Wedding? Is it a reflection that she hasn't earned the like unceasing loyalty of the people. Like, for instance, the guards saying that, well, Edmure's the Lord, so we have to let him in, even though it's obviously a trap. And we have to follow his orders, even though it's obviously just undermining everything. Because that's, you know, that's the kind of answer that they got when they went, you know, trying to rally all the other houses. And it was all just like, sorry, thanks, but no thanks. It was an interesting little bit there. I liked the back and forth between them, but it was sort of, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and you know, the Black Place definitely came off strong there. I thought that it was cool that he at least was okay with Brienne. He didn't you know, shut her down like he did with Jaime. And it was an interesting scene. I liked it. Anyways, the next big scene at the River Run is Jaime and Edmure having about a 5 or 6 minute talk in a tent, and they were definitely not banging there, Jake.
No, you're right. They were not. Once again, we come back to that. To me, it's getting a little tired, but everybody hates the Kingslayer, and nobody is reluctant to rely to remind the Kingslayer that he killed the king and that he's not, his word is worth nothing, right? I mean, I think every character in the damn show, going all the way back to Catelyn and all these people, they're like, ah, Kingslayer, your word's worth nothing. Ah, you know? And so we definitely got a little bit of that from Edmure. But then when it got down to brass tacks, Jaime kind of showed him that the only way for Edmure to really kind of reclaim anything was to try to peacefully resolve the siege. And Jaime convinced him. And he got Edmure to walk right up to the castle and, you know, and declare himself and say, hey, open the gates. This is what we're doing. And that kind of solved the problem on Jaime's end and on Edmure's end. And it just kind of like spelled the end for the Blackfish, who was a kind of a stubborn old dude.
Well, it was the Jaime dilemma that we've been talking about all season. Like, is Jaime a good person? Because Edmure's straight up asking him, like, are you, like, how do you convince yourself that you're a decent person? Like, how do you live with yourself? And Jaime, like, shows both sides, like, his intense commitment to Cersei, but also his willingness to take a child and, you know, fling him against the castle walls just to make a point. Like, so Jaime's willing to be ruthless.
The
callback, too,
yeah. By the way, Jaime was totally kind of cool with admitting that he's in an incestuous relationship.
Oh, yeah. And
I think he's reached the point where he's just like, fuck you all, I don't care.
Well, and it's so cool because in this episode, we got really the two polar, we got the two extremes of Jaime. On one hand, and this is what I thought when I wrote down my notes, is that, you know, Brienne is the angel on his shoulder and Cersei is the devil on his shoulder. And in this episode, he declared the fact that he's willing to do anything to get back to Cersei. And that's what eventually convinced Edmure that Edmure had to basically act and fall in with Jaime, or else, you know, there was really no point. He was going to die. His kid was going to die and all that stuff. My only question is, when we see Jaime actually, you know, how he acts with Brienne, and I think kind of how his character has played out over the last couple of years, I think he really is a guy who's struggling to be good, but he still has this connection to his evil roots, and that's the Lannister house and Cersei. And I think we're still heading for that collision course of, at some point, he's going to have to choose between Brienne and the good side and Cersei and the bad side. And I'm really curious to see how it turns out for him. But I wasn't sure. Do you guys think that he was, when he finally tells Edmure, you know, the things you do for love, and basically, if you don't go with me, I'm going to launch your child into the river. Do you think he was more, he's being absolutely honest in that scene? Or was he playing up the fact that nobody trusts him anyway, so he might as well act like a bastard? Because I thought it was a little bit of both.
I believed he was being honest, because I think the character has shown that he's both sides of this thing, and so he is equal parts like willing to fling a child off the ramparts, like if he needs to. But I think I really like what you were saying about Brienne and Cersei being sort of angel and devil. And Brienne values honor above all else. And Cersei values, I don't know, her. What does Cersei
all
value
Cersei
above
values,
all else? Her children.
Yeah,
but
that's all she
there,
values.
There's like a do whatever it takes to, like, I don't know necessarily had the best way to describe that, but the way that Jaime was describing her and Catelyn on how their devotion to their children was sort of all encompassing and they were willing to do anything for their children. So it's sort of just Jamie's two warring sides, which, you know, are neither good or bad necessarily, although obviously the side of honor is the better side. But, you know, honor would have compelled Jaime to not kill the king, but Jaime did it to, you know, protect the people. So there was sort of, it's the kind of like weird in between that he always seems to land in.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like it goes back to, you know, the other, you know, other movies have been out there, you know, who did the code red, you know, and or were we right to do it? And, you know, do you follow, you know, corrupt leadership and all that stuff? I think Jaime has been misunderstood his entire, you know, life. And obviously he went a little astray when he, you know, starts, you know, gets into an affair with his sister. And that's, you know, the bad side of it, that very kind of corrupt relationship. But just like at the end of the episode, you know, when Michael wasn't very happy with how the Blackfish died, but Jaime certainly was sad that the Blackfish had to die. I don't think Jaime in season one would have given a flying crap about the Blackfish, but I think that he is struggling to become a force for the greater good, but he still has all this baggage hanging over his head when it comes to Cersei, this giant kind of like she's kind of an albatross hanging around his neck. And we'll see whether or not he succumbs to that eventually or not. But I think he's struggling to find his way.
I don't know, guys. I'm still just caught up with the Blackfish dying off screen. To me, like, just because he was so built up, like, about three episodes ago. There's a couple of different episodes that they mention him. We finally see him last week. And it's like, oh, he's a really cool character. I mean, we had seen him, you know, in season three, but we see him again and he's a cool character. We're having these interesting dialogues with him. You couldn't just kill him on screen, really?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought we couldn't see it. I'm sorry, Michael. I apologize on behalf of the show for you, even though I don't have that power. But you know, we had already had the Hound with all the violence. Then we had the Zombie Mountain with all the violence. And I think that in the end, as far as the TV show goes, the Blackfish had a noble death in that he got Brienne and Pod to escape. He didn't ever really give up on his principles, even though he was pretty damn stubborn. And you kind of knew that when he was rushing off into the tunnel, it was kind of a trope, but he still, like, you knew where it was going. You figured he was going to croak.
Okay, really?
It's him against, you know, he was like putting up the final battle to allow Brienne to escape.
Yeah, and it was kind of like, you know, the captain in the Titanic going down with the ship. Fine. I will buy into that. But my only question for you guys is, do you think there's any chance, and I think I might have mentioned this earlier, or it might have been off the podcast before we started recording, any chance he's still alive? Any chance we'll see him in like the next episode or two in shackles or something?
No.
All right.
Put through by a sword.
All right. All right. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, we see.
He breathed his last breath.
All right. All right. So he's good at dying, unlike that
assumed
dude
room from temperature.
The brothers. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Pushing all right. Well, okay. 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 All right. So next time on Game of Thrones, we see the preview for the Bastard Bowl, and looks like it's going to be a whole episode of Bastard Boldness, and it looks pretty legit. There is a quote, thousands of men don't need to die, only one of us, and I believe that came from Ramsay Bolton. Is that right, Alicia?
No, that was John. That was John. Oh, it sounds like John is going to challenge Ramsay to one-on-one combat to prevent loss of life, because John is an honorable person and Ramsay is probably going to be a dick about it.
He's a total bastard.
Yes.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes, literally and figuratively. Yes. Absolutely.
Hey, the last person that was a dick to Ramsay no longer has it. So
thank you for that.
This is true.
Did he chop it all off? Have we ever?
I don't know. I just remember that gif of Ramsay holding it up like a kielbasa will never go away. But let's end this podcast the way we all
fan, right?
No, okay, all right.
That's your fault.
What's got ya? All right, Jake, tell us what's rot ya and what's got ya.
Thank you. I shared a photo with you earlier of my lovely wife, Sarah. She just recently had her 40th birthday, and yeah, we're old. I'm sorry. But I threw a what's got me. I'll do that first. Is that we threw a nice 40th anniversary party for her at a local restaurant, the restaurant that we frequent probably the most. And we had a good old time with a bunch of her friends from the present and the past showed up, and everybody paid a wonderful fitting tribute to her. And she got lots of nice gifts and things. And it was just a lovely little event. And what's wrought me a different side of the same coin is when you throw a party for your wife with lots of people that show up, there are also people that end up showing up and, you know, staying over and just invading your house for a long amount of time. And don't get me wrong, I love having guests, and I was happy to see some of the people that showed up, but it just has been an exhausting long weekend, and now I'm glad because all of them are gone. So the annoyances have gone along with all the fun stuff. But yeah, that wrought me and got me all at the same time. Alicia, what's wrought you? What's got you?
Let's see. What's got me is all the soccer. Soccer in the morning, soccer in the afternoon, soccer at night. It's been beautiful. USA advanced, won their group in the Copa. We've got Spain on Monday morning, early Monday morning, so it's going to be an early call time for me.
Noon alert!
So yeah, it's been a fun weekend. I also went to the Santa Anita Uncorked event on Saturday, which is like a wine tasting, food tasting at the racetrack, which was a lot of fun. So that's all got me. And what's wrought me is psychotic, crazy people who feel the need to kill other human beings because they're hateful and evil and just horrible. And that's
terrible.
That's probably the best way that I can describe, you know, put into words my feelings on some of the events of this weekend. But just, you know, love, you know, choose love, guys. Let's all just be good people and choose love.
How am I supposed to follow that up? I don't know.
Sorry.
very tough one. Yeah, I mean, definitely all of our thoughts are with everything in Orlando. And thankfully, I mean, the LA situation was averted, it looks like. So, yeah, I mean, I think that should rot everybody because, you know, hey, times are awful right now. So, yeah, I have to turn this back onto what's rot me and got me. You've put me in this awful predicament. You should have gone last if you were going to pick that as a rot.
What's rot you is that I've completely, like, bummed out the podcast at the end here. And, yeah, I probably should have gone last. Sorry. But no, this is like a, you know, one of those compliment sandwiches, you know, like you say something nice, like all of Jake's stuff was nice, like even his Ratya was like a sort of nice one. So then mine is the bad thing in the middle. And then you get to take us out on like a high note.
But can he do it? That's my question.
All right. Well, my rot me is, or what's rot me is all this crap about the Tonys. Everyone is all of a sudden all about the Tonys. Ooh, all about the Tonys. Like, no one gives a damn about the Tonys until this year. All of a sudden, everyone is all up on the Tonys because of Hamilton. And the only reason people are up on Hamilton is because it was on last week tonight. Like, it's got me, man. First of all, everyone knows that Scarsdale Surprise should have won the Tony. And no one else gets that. All right, fine, fair enough. But what's
I
got me?
Okay,
that's from Hamilton.
Please, no musicals, no music, dude. Please, no musicals, no musicals. You're killing me. Okay, let me just get to what's got me. Let me get to what's got me. All right, I'm gonna hang up.
Three words that best describe you are, and I quote, stink, stink, stunk.
You done?
I'm done.
Let's finish this compliment sandwich.
All right. Well, let's finish this up with what's got me is that Germany opened up their Euro 2016 campaign on the right side on Sunday with a win over the Ukraine, which is great because everyone knows.
The Ukraine is weak. It's feeble. I think it's time to put the hurt on the Ukraine.
I come from Ukraine. You not say Ukraine weak.
Yeah, well, we're playing a game here, pal.
Ukraine is game to you. How about I take your little Boris?
Well, hey, Ukraine was a game to me, And it was game to Germany, and Germany beat the Ukraine on a couple of beautiful goals. And so, yes, the Ukraine is weak, buddy boy. The Ukraine is weak. And tell me that's not one of your favorite all-time Kramer scenes. Or Kramer Newman scenes. Is that the best ever Kramer Newman scene of all time, Jake?
The best ever. I love the spitting incident that, you know, and all the gesticulations.
Yeah,
that
Kramer, that's a good one.
You know,
yeah,
back and to the left. I love. There's so. I love the when they're in Newman's mail truck, and they're trying to transport the what was it, like bottle caps or something.
Yeah,
from
the
one
bottle
place
caps
to the other.
To Michigan.
Yeah. Oh God, that's so good. So they're. I don't want to poo-poo on your parade, but there's so many good ones. And this is one of the very, very good ones. It's so good, but there's too many to choose.
All right. Fair
but the Ukraine
enough.
Is weak.
Well, yes, the Ukraine is weak. Confirmed. It is confirmed. Unlike Clagan Bowl, which is unconfirmed. But the Ukraine being weak is confirmed. Anyways, let's wrap up this podcast by you, Jake, telling us about what's going to be on What's Brewing with your next episode.
Yeah, thank you very much. We didn't have an episode this week because of my lovely wife's birthday party. So we're going to have one this Tuesday, and it should be fun. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff that is probably music to Trojans' ears, you know, a bunch of bad crap that happened with us. We can't get centers into our school for some reason or another, even though they're like high-achieving guys and some other stuff like that, contract extensions and whatnot. So it'll be fun. What's Brewing Show, whatsbrewingshow.com, at the What's Brewing Show, and enjoy. Thank you.
Yeah, and I heard that UCLA missed out on Tate Martell. Can't be feeling good.
Like the Trojans.
Can't be.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, that's true. True. Yeah. Alicia, what's coming up on Rantoro Radio this week?
Yeah, I believe we're doing a show Monday night that will be up on Tuesday, and I'm sure we will be talking Tate Martell. We may also be talking one of the two, if not both, of the offensive line commits that USC got at the end of last week. And maybe some, you know, updates on other newsy things around USC, like the Nelson Aguilar situation and that kind of stuff. And maybe we'll have we'll finally do our Fix College Football the episode maybe. That we've been pushing back like every week.
We really need to quick discussion question before I wrap this podcast completely up though. Has Tate Martell reached Jimmy Clausen levels?
Oh. He's one championship guarantee away from reaching it for me.
Yeah,
Jake?
To me, I don't give any of these guys any like street cred until they're actually like in a college uniform doing something. So it's just more of the baloney.
See, we need
to
have Bill on because Bill likes recruiting.
Oh my God, he would just be like, oh my God, you guys! Oh! And plus, like he like is totally nuts over the Ohio State fan, so he probably is happy that Tate Martell went there instead of UCLA, but knowing Bill, so God knows.
Hey, Bill doesn't like musicals, and he likes recruiting. I think, Alicia, we brought on the wrong dude. We brought on the wrong dude here, Jake.
Yeah, but he doesn't have the attention span to watch more than about 14 seconds of Game of Thrones and actually talk about it, so.
All right. Fair enough. But that's going to wrap up the podcast. As always, follow us on Twitter at RandomTro. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/RandomTro. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, over TuneIn, and SoundCloud at SoundCloud.com/RandomTro Radio. Our phone number is 213-373-1872. Our email address is RandomTroy@fanside.com. Alicia, give us a final word.
Final word is axe.
All right, nice. Give him the axe, give him the axe, right in the neck, right in the neck. Yes.
I love it. It's a violin.
All right, we will see you guys later. See ya.
See ya. Bye.
See, that comes from, that's my grandma's, in her high school. She went to high school at Bowie High in El Paso, Texas. And that was her, she played the drums. That was her school's, like, their chant. So
really?
There was, she, yes,
it's interesting.
Yeah, so she has a, she has dementia. A couple of times she was like, you know, really going in and out of it. And so I would just come up to her and be like, give him the axe, give him. And then she'd look at me and she'd put her hand next to her neck and go right in the neck. And like, that would be what snapped her out of it.
That's funny. I mean, you know that You know, it's the Stanford thing too, right?
Oh, the Stanford X, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Is that the actual chant? They
yeah. Give him the axe right in the neck. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, that's funny that is one
well, that's
of the
what
ones
the hound does, too. That's what the
went
hound
on
does.
To multiple. Yeah, absolutely. I got that right.
Give him the axe, right in the balls. Yeah.
And on that note, I got to go, guys.
Me too.
I'll talk to you guys later.
Bye-bye.